Hey friends, we have a great presentation today. It's going to be food for thought. Vicki Lee is with us and Victoria does our Pepper Time presentations. And this one's going to be a longer presentation and she's going to take us through linkages to Aleister Crowley. So Vicki, welcome. And what would you like to say before we get started? We have about 20, 25 slides to make our way through.
Well, thanks for having me back today, Mike. It's great to be here. And I have had this research, most of it, sitting in my files for 2, 3, 4 years, some of it. And I just wanted to share it. It was good. It may not be definitive, but it's kind of fun. So I just wanted to share it with everyone today.
Okay, kind of like clearing out the hard drive. I've done that.
Right? Right, right. Okay. So I've titled this, Could Aleister Ataturk Be Billy Shears? And I do want to tell everyone in this video, it's very confusing because all of the characters have multiple names, just like Bill. So as I introduce those, I hope to kind of give the aliases, but I apologize in advance if it becomes confusing with the names.
Okay, no problem. And if I get confused, I'll let you know, and then we can hopefully unconfuse me and the audience. How's that?
Okay, okay. The first slide here, we have Aleister Crowley and his son, Aleister Ataturk. And this was taken on a beach near Cornwall. When it looks like Ataturk was something like 2. Okay?
Okay.
And the next slide, we have a letter from Aleister to his son. So we know that he did have a son. And that is pretty well documented in many of his diaries and the books about him.
Well, Ataturk is actually in Wikipedia as well as one of his offspring, yes?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Well recognized.
My dear son, this is the first letter that your father has ever written to you. So you can imagine that it will be very important, and you should keep it and lay it by your heart. First of all, let me tell you how intensely happy your reappearance has made me. I feel that I must devote a great deal of my time to watching over your career. I was very pleased to hear that you have decided to learn to read, and that, of course, means learning to write. A word of warning about this. In these last years, children have been taught to write script, as they call it, which is a very bad thing. You must write in such a way that it impresses your personality on the reader. On top of that, I want to tell you something about yourself. One of your ancestors was Duke of a place called La Quiberia in Brittany and came over to England with the Duke of Richmond, who was the original heir to the English throne, to help him turn out the usurper known to history as Richard III. Since then, our family has made its mark on the world on several occasions, though never anything very brilliant. Now, I want you to take this very seriously. I want you to be very proud of yourself for belonging to such a family. Owing to the French Revolution and various other catastrophes, the dukedom is no longer in existence legally, but morally it is so. And I want you to learn to behave as a duke would behave. You must be high-minded, generous, noble, and above all, without fear. For that last reason, you must never tell a lie. For to do so shows that you're afraid of the person to whom you tell it. And I want you to be afraid of nobody. Now, with regard to your education, I was wont particularly to insist on learning Latin. And I will give you my reasons. First, anyone who knows Latin gains a greater command of and understanding of the English language than he would otherwise possess. He will be able to reason out for himself the meaning of words with which he is unfamiliar. Secondly, if you are well grounded in Latin, you are halfway to a knowledge of French, Spanish, Italian, and Portuguese, for all these languages, as well as English, are derived from Latin. Thirdly, the most important of all, much of the unconscious part of your mind has been formed by the writing of Latin and Greek authors. This implies that you should also learn a certain amount of Greek. One of the wisest men of olden times gave the instruction to his pupils, "Know thyself." And learning the Latin helps you to do this for the reason that I've already explained above. I regard this as very important indeed. There are a great many people going about today who tell you that Latin is no use to you in the ordinary affairs of life. And that is quite true if you're going to be some commonplace person like a tradesman or a bank clerk. But you are a gentleman, and if you want to be an educated gentleman, you must know Latin. There is another matter that I want to put before you. It will be a very good plan if you learn to play chess. For one thing, it is a very good training for the mind, and for another, it is the only game of all the games worth playing which lasts you throughout your life. You can get as much pleasure out of it when you are 60 as when you are 20. I think that is all I have to say to you today, and I shall expect you to manage somehow to write me an answer. You see, much of the time, we shall not be able to communicate face to face, and there will be a good many questions that you will want to ask me, which you cannot do unless you write good English. That reminds me. There's one more point that I want to impress on you. The best models of English writing are Shakespeare and the Old Testament, especially the Book of Job, the Psalms and Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. It will be a very good thing for you to commit as much as you can both of these books and the best plays of Shakespeare to memory, so that they form the foundation of your style. In writing English, the most important quality that you can acquire is style. That makes all the difference to anyone who reads what you write, whether you use the best phrases in the best way. You will have to devote some time to grammar and syntax, and also to logic. Logic is the science and the art of using words, and it teaches you to think correctly without making blunders in reasoning, which nowadays everyone is liable to do, just because they have not got the training which I am proposing to give you. Now, my dear son, I will close this long letter in the eager hope that you will follow my advice in all respects. Love is the law, love under will, your affectionate father.
Okay. So on the next slide, we see the most common picture out there of Ataturk, and he has red hair. And he was born on May 2nd, 1937, to Pat. Now, here we go with the names. Pat, Patricia, Maureen, Doherty, and Aleister Crowley. He was the moon child that they planned. He was supposed to be born on May 1st, 1937, but was born one day later than expected. And Aleister Crowley, at the end of his life, instructed the OTO to provide education and care for Aleister Ataturk. Aleister Ataturk began his formal education in Scotland in 1947 at a prep school, and this was the same school that Prince Charles, now King Charles, attended. We're going to get into some details about him, but there's varying sources that say he died in 1978 as well as 2002. And I didn't think they gave very good reasons for the two dates, but we'll get to that.
So there's two dates out there in which he died.
Yeah, two death dates.
Interesting. Also, going back to the second bullet, he was supposed to be born on Beltane.
He was, I believe in the diaries, the conception date was July 31st of the year prior. And there was a lot of detail about the people that were around at that time and Pat coming and going and one of the other women giving her a hard time. I mean, there's a lot of detail about it, and generally about Pat being around Aleister. And they did try to have this baby. It wasn't, a lot of the accounts out there say that she ran up to him after this court hearing and said, "Oh, I want to have your baby." And then they did. But there was 3 years between the court date and when he was born. So this was a process, definitely. It was something that was definitely planned. And there's evidence that she knew him before the court date.
Okay, and I looked up on Wikipedia. It says that Beltane is the Gaelic May Day festival.
Yes, it is one of the biggest occult holidays of the year, if not the biggest, probably.
Okay, so Alice missed by one day.
Well, you know how these people think. They like the numbers, but they're probably looking at an astrology chart and degrees and things like that. And because it's within 24 hours, it probably qualifies for what they wanted. I don't know exactly there, but they did get close.
Okay, good point. Slide number four.
Number four, Ataturk's mother, Deirdre Patricia Maureen Daughtry. She was born in 1915 and died in 1992. She goes by the names Pat, Patsy, the Girl. AC called her the Girl or the Girl Pat. Patricia McAlpine, Patricia McClellan, and Deidre. All these are names that she goes by. So if I have messed up on one of the slides and said Deidre instead of Pat, just hang with me there.
Okay, so she has a lot of aliases.
Where else have we seen that?
Exactly.
Her grandparents were Thomas Scott, who you can see over to the right. He was the founder of the New Ellen School of Painting, and he was a very successful and known painter. And his wife, Caroline, was also an artist, and she was born in Liverpool, and she was the primary she raised Pat, basically, because, as we'll go on to the next slide, this is their house that they built. It was built in 1881, and they had one daughter named Phyllis. Now, Phyllis was a singer and an actress, and I say actress-singer, and she was also an author, but she didn't stay in Cornwall much. She was a world traveler. So when Pat was born, she kind of got left behind for Carolyn to raise. The house was built in 1909. It was called Wheel Betsy, which was after a mining operation nearby. And after Thomas and Caroline died, the descendants owned it for over 90 years, passing from Thomas to Caroline to the daughter Phyllis to Pat, who sold it to a daughter Miranda in 1974. Now, I found that in like a tax record or some kind of an archive of historic homes that it sold to Miranda, but I never did find anywhere else where she had a daughter, Miranda. So I don't know where that came from. That's just what it said.
Okay, and it's interesting, the house being built in 1909, because that's the same year that Crowley published the Book of the Law in 1909. So I don't know if that means anything, but it is interesting.
And 1909 is one after 909 backwards.
Yes.
So this is a family home built for several family members to live in, several generations, I guess you'd say. And Pat and Caroline did kind of cycle in and out of there throughout their lives. And it is in Cornwall.
It looks like a huge home.
I know. I was just trying to guess the size on that because I do a lot with houses and real estate and things. And I would say across the front, that's probably about 100 feet. That is just a guess, but that's a long house.
Yeah.
And then it looks like it has a conservatory in the back. So plus there's a basement level.
Interesting.
Next slide is about Phyllis. Now, this is the daughter of Thomas and Caroline who built the home. And this would be the mother of Pat. Okay. And she was born in 1882. And she died in 1963. Now, we all know that there is a song that Bill has done called 1882. And it is interesting, that song.
Well, that's the video that has some of these questionable images in it, right?
It is. When you go back through there and you isolate those images in the video 1882, most of them are sacrificed, rock stars and things. I mean...
Yeah. So what I'll do, folks, is I'll put the link to that video down below in the description box. And to watch it, you're going to have to play it in slow motion because a lot of the images go by very quickly.
Now, Phyllis was the only child of Thomas and Caroline, and she wrote several children's books and later became a singer. She married Patrick Daughtry, who died in South Africa from war wounds in 1918, and he never saw their only child, Patsy, or Pat. She remarried twice after that, leaving Patsy to be raised by Carolyn at Wheel Betsy while she traveled with her singing career. And one of her subsequent husbands was 30 years younger than her, and he was a first cousin once removed. So I think Phyllis is probably a pretty colorful character, if I were just
guessing. Yeah, all in the family.
Yeah. Phyllis was presented to the Queen at Buckingham Palace, and so was Pat. I think that Phyllis here in the painting by her father on the bottom of the slide. The colorful photo looks a lot like Jane Asher at this in a similar age. That's just my opinion.
No, she does. And what I noticed is the hair. It's that reddish blonde hair.
It's kind of a particular color of red hair, too, that Jane Asher had, I think. But I just think they look a lot alike, and that was kind of strange.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. We're going to get on to Deidre Pat now and learn a little bit more about her. When she was 16 or 17, she met Robin Thin, and he was middle-aged. He had been married, I believe, and he had separated from his wife and children, and it wasn't so easy to get a divorce back in those days. So they were just separated, and he took up with Pat. Robin was a student of the occult and had ties to the Golden Dawn. He was trying to establish Mandrake Press to help Crowley get some of his books published. He did study Crowley, and then later in his life, he got a little bit more disillusioned with Crowley, probably because he was running around with his girlfriend, and became a student.
That might do it.
Yeah. And became a student of Rudolf Steiner. Robin was separated from his wife. I mentioned that. When Pat became pregnant with Ataturk, she named Robin as the father as far as publicly went. Anyone who asked, that was the father. And Robin just went along with it. He did die of a stroke. They were on a car ride one day, just taking a country ride, and he had a stroke. And by the time she got him to the hospital, there was nothing they could do for him. The Moonchild baby from Pat and AC was born May 2nd, 1937, a Taurus. Pat wanted to name him. Do you know how that's pronounced, Mike? Is that?
I have no idea. It sounds like Gier.
I don't know if it's Gier or Gier, but let's go with Gier.
Okay.
But AC called him Alistair Ataturk. The name came from a Turkish dictator who had a similar astrological birth chart to Ataturk. I call him Ataturk because that's the one name of all his aliases that doesn't get confused with anything else.
That's fine. Less confusion is good.
Now, Pat kept in contact with Aleister Crowley sporadically throughout his life, and she was at his bedside when he passed. I think those years during the war, though, there wasn't as much correspondence or any, maybe. She did marry Jim McAlpine and had three other children. Her son, Michael, was described as her real magical child, who Aleister Crowley told her was the reincarnation of Michelangelo. Michael was dressed like a girl and had long hair. Now, I thought this was kind of an interesting detail because you're seeing the trans thing going on at a time way before that was typically done.
Yeah. This to me is Cult of Dionysus stuff.
Well, they're living by a playbook, you know, and this is part of it. So, you know, that's an early example of what we see all the time today.
Right.
But that, I thought that was a really interesting detail that they included that. Jim McAlpine was an intelligence officer. He died in 1939, never returning from the war. And here's another interesting tidbit. Pat was stationed in Egypt during World War II as a base siphon officer, and her children and mother were living there also. So Ataturk was with her in Egypt during World War II.
As a cipher officer,
as
that's
a cipher,
interesting. Yeah.
That's like a code breaker.
Yes, yep.
Okay, moving on to the next slide, we're going to begin talking about Ataturk here. And up at the top of the slide, I put most of his aliases. So for simplicity, we're going to say Ataturk. In the 1970s, there was a writer that decided he was going to do a study on Aleister Crowley, and he was acquainted with Pat. They were friends. And of this writing and research, only two chapters remain, and they were written by Pat, and they're mostly about Ataturk. So I've pulled a few key concepts out of these and want to look at them. It began in 1955. How old would have Bill been then? About 18, something like that?
Yeah, he was born in 37.
Okay, in 1955, Ataturk wrote a letter to Gerald York stating that he was registered for national service and had also registered for an American visa. So Gerald York was a person in the OTO, I believe, who was in charge of his education and Aleister Crowley had put people in charge of overseeing this person.
Right.
So this is someone that he had to stay in contact with. Now, there are some quotes out of the letters, and I think the letters may exist, but I never saw the letter itself. I just saw quotes from it. This sounds like a normal person, educated person who made logical sentences and very coherent statements and things when I read through this. Ataturk was anxious to make money so that he could help his mother, as money was tight and she had several people that depended on her, including his grandmother. Well, that kind of fits the Pat story because she had her mother. She had four children, we think, three or four children. And then there were others that stayed there. It sounds like, I don't know if they were adopted or fosters or just friends, but it sounds like there was a lot of kids that came in and out of Wheel Betsy. And Pat had charge of them for some reason. So anyway, he was concerned that she have enough money. He was passed on for national service due to mastoids. I have never heard of Bill having mastoids. That may be a strike on the other side saying.
Well, what exactly is mastoids?
It has to do with the ear and hearing. It's something that can keep you out of the service, apparently. Again, we're going to get into this, and there's a lot of facts that sound pretty funny as we keep going. One of the facts in the book or in the writing said that he may have gone to America to work with Kenneth Anger. So, well, that's interesting. You know,
that's very interesting.
So I drew a line here on the slide because that is the last part that about Ataturk that made sense when you were reading these chapters. So now the next ones, the next couple slides and the next statements, these are things that may not have gelled with, these are going to be things that are definitely not on the Bill timeline. And it looks to me like either this is a real person and he's kind of crazy, or they invented a person or, and someone else is playing the role now. So in 1962, Ataturk resurfaces. He's been gone since 1955, but in 1962, he resurfaces and he's living in England. He got a stern letter from York saying that he caused problems with Kenneth Anger. So it sounds like he did go to America. He begins to do these nonsensical things like proposing a $100 million National Universal Center in Barstow. And it was right by a property that Crowley had a failed turkey farm. It was either the same property or one adjacent to it. This is out of character from the Ataturk from before, okay? We start seeing these kind of bizarre ideas.
I was just going to say that it appeared that he was stable.
Yeah.
And now they're painting this picture where he's not stable.
Yeah, I mean, this is a person who was supposed to be educated at the same school as the King of England, okay?
Right.
And now today, it wouldn't be uncommon for someone to say, oh, let's make a $100 million socialism center in America. But back then, $100 million was a lot of money, a lot more than it is now. And they didn't really float those ideas so much. So
right.
This is back out of the playbook, I think. It's stated in the chapters that Ataturk was an engineering draftsman and that he had visited Canada. And in the mid-70s, all of a sudden, he was having doubts that he was Aleister Crowley's son. He wrote nonsensical books and was just, he wanted to appoint himself into some political positions. That was rather interesting. The accounts suggest he was educationally disadvantaged. He had poor penmanship and grammar. I mean, it said that. And you can't go to a prep school and have poor penmanship and grammar. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
He was, some accounts suggested that he was schizophrenic or possibly had multiple personalities. And I suppose with that one, you could say, well, maybe he was well when he was young and got sick when he was old. I don't know, but.
Or there was some type of mind control program.
Yes. Damage, brain damage somehow that way.
Yeah.
There's a report that he had a son born. And then I look at the date and I'm like, well, that's a solstice. June 20th, 1968. And I think that some of this, it hinted that there was more than one child, like he had two. And then it never mentioned them again. And this, got to remember, this is Grandma writing the chapter. This is Pat writing about this. It said he was deeply religious and that he died. Pat said he died in 1978. And they refer to telegrams and quote them that were sent relaying the news of his death. And then later on, they explain that away as it was a joke and he was like Aleister Crowley, who once faked his own death.
Did they say his religious convictions, what they were?
No. No. Usually when they say deeply religious, they're going to be implying some kind of Christian spirituality, I would say, but I don't know. It just didn't say.
Yeah, and if this is true, that may have been one of the reasons why he had a falling out with Kenneth Anger.
Yes.
If this is true.
If this is true. He also claimed to several people to be a concert pianist, but when they pressed him to play, he wasn't really able to. And that's not Bill. If anybody
No.
wanted him to play the piano, he is not shy. But that was the report from Pat. So I got just a little couple more. There was an additional article. I think it was Deshannigan or something. There was a lot in that article. There's a lot of people or firsthand accounts. I can even find firsthand accounts of people in commentary where they knew Ataturk or knew of him when he was around. And it's always the schizophrenic, crazy, strange person is what they're describing. Anyway, in Deshannigan's article, it described him as having black cropped hair, but the photo that generally circulates, he has red hair. Deshannigan also painted him as very eccentric and said that they had done manual labor, digging ditches and maintenance, things like that. And then he was living on a park bench at the end of his life with his suitcases organized. And now in that article, it says that he died in 2002 when his own mother wrote chapters saying he died in 1978. So I didn't put a lot of stock into the Deshannigan article or the articles written by Pat generally because they're not consistent. They just don't seem to make sense or track. It's like it's two stories going on.
When you say it's not consistent, Vicki, so that I'm on the same page here, not consistent relative to
growing up and going to prep school.
Gotcha.
And then going away to America for, you know, some reason after you turn 18 to learn something. And then he comes back and all of a sudden he's nuts and he's a manual laborer and he can't spell. And there's something wrong with that story.
Yeah.
As far as normal goes, the story just doesn't, it takes two different turns here.
Okay.
Okay. And we're going to get into the other turn here just a minute. So I just wanted to say that I didn't think that the stories were consistent. There's too many facts that contradict each other. So I didn't put a lot of weight on that, but I will admit it is possible. It is possible that there really is this person who was schizophrenic or whatever. And even though his mother and grandmother met the queen and he had a great big house, he died on a park bench with his suitcases organized. I'll admit that's all possible. The one thing that isn't contradictory is that Ataturk visited Aleister Crowley on multiple occasions and at the end of his life. So that was one fact through all of that that remained kind of consistent. Okay, slide 11. What was Ataturk's history rewritten? The name William Shepherd begins to appear in the music industry as early as 1955. There were probably at least three people with the same name. And Bill tells us in memoirs that he uses several different aliases. I tried to look up visas from this period, but it said the records had been destroyed. So I wasn't able to see, you know, if Ataturk had a visa or anything like that. Is it possible that Bill came to America in 1955 and returned to England around 1960 or 1962? Did he walk away from Ataturk at that point and assume another identity? It seems like prior to 1955 that Ataturk lived a life of affluent lifestyle to some extent, and it is reported that he had a good education. I would have to make an extraordinary assumption that he did finish the education. I keep talking about his education, but what if he never went? What if, you know, that never materialized? Although it kind of said he would or he did, you know, what if he didn't?
So are you saying, Vicki, that the extraordinary assumption would be that...
That he did
finish. That he did, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm going to say that he did finish. It just mentions it too many times, so I'm going to say that he did finish or have a lot of it anyway, a few years of it. Would a person whose mother and grandmother be presented to the Queen and attend such formal education turn out to be manual laborer with poor grammar? I think I already said that. I apologize for repeating.
It's worth repeating because it's true. You know, you wouldn't expect somebody with this type of family history to be a manual laborer and to have poor grammar.
So that brings us to the next slide, which is number 12. And why do I think it's a possibility that William Shepherd, Billy Shears, was previously Alistair Ataturk Crowley? The biggest one is the birth year. Mims confirms to us that Bill was born in 1937, so is Ataturk. Bill is comfortable around affluence. Bill wrote the song 1882. We talked a little bit about that. Will Betsy being constructed in 1909. Okay, now here's where it gets a little bit more interesting. World War II, Pat was stationed in Egypt as a base siphon officer. This means many of Bill's formative childhood years before the age of 10, I say Bill's, let's say Ataturk's.
Ataturk's would have been spent in Egypt.
Would have been spent in Egypt before the age of 10, because we know he was back visiting Crowley at age 10. So is this where the Egyptian influence for Egypt station comes from? I've always kind of wondered why he, you know, where all the Egypt stuff came from, other than, you know, maybe believing in gods or something like that. I just thought it was a lot. There's a lot of Egyptian stuff in Bill's music.
Yeah, you're saying it's more than just the occult. He has some kind of physical linkage back to Egypt.
Yeah. Egypt station. My mom was stationed in Egypt. That's not even stretching it.
Right.
And Mims is an encoded book. The very ciphers that they used then could be in that book, and we don't know it. I did email Tom and flat out ask, are there more ciphers in your book than the ones you explain, meaning the bolded words and, you know, reading the footnotes and the bolded words and that kind of thing? And he said, yeah, there are.
He did.
But I don't even know, honestly, where to start with looking for them. There's so many ciphers and codes and different things. But it's interesting to know that.
Well, I don't think I'm going to be digging into any more of that.
I know.
This stuff's wearing me out.
I know. General inconsistency with Ataturk's life after 1955 and with the two death dates. That's another reason. The overwhelming amount of Beatles and Wings correlations to Crowley, such as the winged beetle. And I could go on for an hour with those correlations, but I'll just give you the big one there. And Bill does kind of look like a little bit like Pat. He also looks a little bit like Thomas Scotch. And we know he had red hair. We know that Bill has red hair. So I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, he has that reddish blonde hair if we take a look back to his Stanshall days.
Now, moving on to the next slide, there is another picture of Ataturk. And in this one, we can tell this is a dark-headed person, even though he's rather bald. This is a person with dark hair. And it doesn't, to me, look like the same person as the red-headed one in the OTO robes on the first slides that I showed. So I do not know why two pictures float around, but they do. And this is the other big picture of Ataturk that we see. The Gotch family featured a singer, author, and painters. These are some of Bill's favorite things to do. And Aleister Crowley was also a painter. Going back to the letter from Aleister Crowley at the beginning of the video, there is evidence that Bill has learned Latin, but I've never seen any evidence that he learned chess. Those were things that Aleister had asked him to do. If he was working with anger, there is a lot of Crowley represented in this work, even making a documentary on Crowley in this exact time period.
Who made a documentary about Crowley during his time period?
Anger. I don't think you can find it, or maybe they didn't finish it. I'm not really sure, but that's what he was concentrating on at that time, was Crowley stuff.
Yeah, so Kenneth Anger, the baton was passed to him once Alistair passed away.
It makes sense to me if it's Alistair's son, no matter who, whether that be Bill or someone else, that they send him to Kenneth Anger.
Yeah.
Because if the, yeah, it just makes sense to me. And then Kenneth Anger at the same time was doing Crowley things, but this wasn't really a person who was, if it's Bill, he probably irritated him because Bill is a workaholic.
I have a clip of Billy during an interview, I guess it goes back a few years ago, where he explains that he was taught to write backwards
Wow.
during his formative years.
Well, I hate to admit this, but there's a lot of times now where I see something. I don't watch a lot of TV, but if I'm watching something pop culture and I see a name, just sit there for a second and try to think of what it is backwards. And then you'd be surprised what you figure out. You would be real surprised. Like, for instance, Oprah backwards is Harpo, and what's her business called? It's called Harpo.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's what we always say, Vicky. The world is run by occultists. I know a lot of folks still don't want to believe that, or they can't wrap their heads around it, but that's a fact.
This might be a good time to open your eyes to things.
Absolutely. Yep.
Maybe you should listen. I know this might be a little advanced for Paula's dead people, this topic, but you should really open your eyes. Did you see the Grammy Awards? Did you see the Super Bowl halftime show? I
Right.
mean, they were talking when they were doing that. They were telling all kinds of stories to those people who understand. You know, it's getting a little old being on the outside, not knowing what goes on. Once you find that, once you figure it out, it's very frightening, but you should know.
You should know because when you don't know, what happens is you're watching that and they're pulling you into the ritual. They're actually bringing your consciousness and your focus into the ritual that's being performed. I didn't watch any of that stuff. I didn't watch the Grammys, Vicky. I did not watch the halftime show, the Super Bowl halftime show. I didn't watch any of that stuff. I have no interest in it. I'll catch up with it the next day to look at the highlights as far as what went on.
I didn't watch the Grammys either. I would never watch anything like that, but it was so bad that every single person on the planet thought they needed to post it up. There was no way to avoid watching it then. And once you started seeing it, you couldn't unsee it. You couldn't stop seeing it even. It was so bad.
Well, and there's a difference between watching it blindly and just being pulled into the ritual versus watching it with a discerning eye and ear, knowing what it is they're trying to do. Because when you know, their magic does not work.
Right. When you know their magic does not work, that's exactly correct. When you understand what they're doing, in which case you wouldn't be watching it, that's true.
Exactly. Because of the work that we do have to catch up with it at some point because it may fold into what it is that we're researching or what it is that we would like to communicate out to the audience.
And on that topic, I did watch the Super Bowl, but that's because I am in Missouri. And there was a Missouri team playing, and so we did have a neighborhood party, and I got kind of stuck where I was sitting, so I was forced to watch it. Bill was there. I was thinking, that's interesting.
Yeah, I know Sally sent me some emails that explained from her perspective why he was there. There was an occult reason why Billy was at the Super Bowl.
And the Super Bowl was another ritual, so,
Yeah. So I'm sure she's going to cover that in her presentation. I don't want to steal her thunder, but she has that whole thing kind of figured out as it pertains to Billy.
moving on, we're still on slide, I think it's 12,
13.
13. Okay, I'm sorry. Of course, 13. McAlpine, that was Pat's husband's name after Ataturk was born. She did marry, and his name was McAlpine. But I've kind of wondered, is that where Macca came from? I don't know exactly when they started calling Paul McCartney Macca. Do you? I haven't been able to figure it out.
No.
It seemed like it wasn't there pre-66, though. What do you say on that?
I would agree with that. We could be wrong. Somebody in the comment section will correct us if we are.
I mean, there are times where you're watching something from early on and then you go back and refer to them as Macca, but I never heard them called NACA by Brian Epstein or you know, any announcers or anything like
or
that.
Or John Lennon calling him Macca or George Harrison. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I wondered if Macca came from McAlpine. It's natural.
Could be.
So in theory, Bill would have had to walk away from being Ataturk to become Paul. This would require a replacement or explanation of what happened to him. So in other words, they would have had to slide yet another payroll character in there to be Ataturk for several years.
So Ataturk was swapped out too.
That if Bill was Ataturk, that's what would have had to happen. They had to have a person playing that role.
Right. Well, take a look at the Stanshall character. If you go on Wikipedia, it says that Vivian Stanshall died. We know that Billy played the character in the Bonzos, and the person that actually passed away was Victor, who was on Billy's payroll to play the character of Vivian Stanshall, so Billy's McCartney and Stanshall characters could coexist. The point I'm trying to make is that they will doctor information to suit their needs. So is it possible? Yeah, anything's possible.
So Pat, going back here, she died. Pat died in 1992, and the two death dates on Ataturk were 2002 and 1978.
Which slide did you go back to?
Slide number 4 to find out Pat's birth date or death date, 1992. And then Ataturk's slide number 10. And it says 2002 and 1978. Now, not the 1978, supposedly Pat herself wrote that account.
Okay.
That's why I'm saying it's very confusing. But then Des Hannigan and a lot of other sources swear by the 2002, and they come up with a, you know, a death or other death things about that, why they think that. But it's just, that's a big difference, 1978 to 2002. But Pat died in the middle of that time span, so she would no longer have been able to deflect that when she was no longer around.
Right.
So they would want to put him to bed, I would think. Next slide, number 14, is a very unscientific thing I've done here, but I always like to do the photo comparisons. So on the left is baby Ataturk in 1941 or so. And on the right is baby James McCartney, Bill's son, who states in memoirs that he looks just like James before his surgeries.
Right.
So there's a little bit of resemblance. It's not exact, and they are babies, so it's a little bit harder, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's okay. Next slide. This is album art from Egypt Station. So I just wanted to bring this back. Was Bill's mom stationed in Egypt? Egypt does seem to have a profound influence on Bill. So I just wanted to remind everyone of how much Egypt influence that he really does have.
By the way, nice job on the slides.
Oh, thanks. I found a new button on PowerPoint that helped me out a little bit. slide 16. These are British cipher officers during World War II. And the one on the bottom left was taken in Egypt. I know I kind of blocked out one of the faces, but it just kind of gives you an idea that there actually was such a thing. And many of them traveled. They may have been stationed in a place, but they may have traveled from base to base, and they were kept on the ships, and they were hidden because they were women, and women didn't have a place on a ship. So they knew if they saw women there that there was something up with them. So they had to stay off deck when they were on ships, but they did travel. And the picture at the top is in Quebec during World War II. I don't know. Maybe it's just a stretch, but I thought that the person on the second from right looked like Pat a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
So I put the third picture there. I thought they resembled each other. It may or may not be, but again, that's what she did. She was a cipher officer. And the next slide is just more photos of like a cipher school they had in London, just to kind of, so everyone understands this was the climate at that time, and what Pat had to do during World War II.
You know, it's interesting. Tom told me going back, a number of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, that he was taught encoding at an earlier time in his life. And at that time, he didn't understand why he was being taught the skills. So as I'm going through this with you, I'm thinking, this is very interesting. She was into ciphers and breaking codes, and Tom is an encoder.
After reading this, I kind of got the opinion that maybe the more special people, I mean, they would have had to have a minimal level of intelligence, obviously, but the interviews with the women are always like, we had no idea what we were doing. We just showed up and then we learned. No one knew what they were doing. We learned how to be code breakers. I kind of got the idea that that was more for elite, maybe not really elite people, but people that they wanted to put in a safe place.
Yeah, but you have to have aptitude to do the work.
Yes.
So you had to have some brain power, otherwise you weren't going to be a very good
right. And I mean, she
decoder.
Was stationed in Egypt, and she got to take her mother, some kids, I don't know how many she had at that time, but she got to take her family. So I just felt like this was a person who they were looking out for a little bit more than normal, but maybe that's just my feelings on it. Slide 18, we have Kenneth Anger, and this is just, if you look up Kenneth Anger in Wikipedia, it tells you, all about him. And I just picked out the period 1953 through 1960. This is when Ataturk may have been working with him, and these are the projects he was working on. So it's very Crowley-esque time period. And that's why I think it's possible. It does say in here that he was over in Europe doing some of the work too, to be fair. I don't know.
Now, Anger was born in 1927, so he's really on in years. He's, 96. Yeah, he's 96 years old. He's still alive.
My goodness.
Yeah, he's lived a long, long life. Anyway.
I guess he knows something we don't.
Yeah. Probably all that yoga.
The next slide, I just put it in here for fun. I kept noticing Bill had this thing about Buddy Holly, and so I started kind of snapping some pictures, and I think that he either was just had a big Buddy Holly thing when he started into music, or maybe he wanted to play him. I mean, it would have been a lot easier being a Buddy Holly double than a lot of other people, because they didn't have all the media and internet and pictures out there. People wouldn't have known if it was him or not in 19,
right.
In the late 50s probably. But the two on the bottom right where they're standing, and Bill was very thin when he first started, a lot thinner than he was later. And how they're standing with that bent style, I was just like, I don't know what's up with these two, but he definitely has a Buddy Holly thing.
Yeah.
Okay, the next slide. In the summer of 1947, Pat came to Netherwood with her four children, including Alistair Ataturk, spent most of the final months with Crowley, and was there beside him during his last days. According to McAlpine, the Beast remained in good spirits, enjoying the comings and goings of Alistair Ataturk and the other children who adored him in turn. Crowley did, however, remain in bed. The day before he died, he talked calmly and at length with McAlpine. The following day was a still one, but at the moment of Crowley's death, which came quietly, the curtains of the room were caught by a gust of wind and a peal of thunder was heard. It was the gods greeting him, said McAlpine. Crowley's son Ataturk was born May 2nd, 1937. According to a biography written by Martin Booth, Ataturk's formal education started in 1948 before traveling to the U.S. sometime later. He later changed his name to Randall Gere and died in a car accident in the UK in 2002. One source says he came to age in California, but another claims Paris. There is supposed to be a photograph of him in OTO robes taken around 1976. I believe that to be the one with the red hair. His death certificate says Charles Edward, all of his names. formerly known as Alistair McAlpine.
And he died in a car crash. That's a little weird.
I don't remember what he supposedly died of the first time. I think just illness.
Yeah.
The second time it was a car wreck, which that's funny too, but.
Yeah.
So the next one, I just did some side-by-side showing you what Pat looks like, what Aleister Crowley looks like, what Bill looks like. I don't know. What do you think about that, Mike?
Well, I was looking at these images. The bottom left, which is not a very flattering picture of Billy, he's probably not going to enjoy that one being in the presentation, but that's the way it goes. I can see similarities to Pat. You know, in other words, I can look at him and her and say, it's possible they're related.
I thought so too.
The upper right is a little different for me because the picture of Billy in the middle, that is with his surgeries. So that's a little tough, even though as time has gone on, the surgeries are not holding together like they used to in the beginning.
Right.
The bottom right, I would say that they look like two different people to me. That's my opinion. The noses look different to me.
Yeah.
The mouths. The left ear, which is on our right, looks different between the two. So I would say that the bottom right, if I'm going to be objective, are not the same person.
Okay.
Did I win?
I don't know. The earlobes of the top middle look different to me than the earlobes on the bottom right.
Yeah.
But I included the bottom right because it was actually on a Beatles album.
The other problem we have, Vicki, as you know, is there are so many doubles, lookalikes, and doctored images out there that it becomes very, very difficult.
Right.
To nail something down and say, oh, that's him. You just don't know. I mean, obviously, there are images out there that they are of Billy. But the sea of imagery has been so compromised that it makes it difficult to do these types of comparisons.
That's true. But everybody likes to look at them, so.
No. Don't get me wrong. It's very interesting. In fact, like I said, the bottom left with Billy and Pat, if somebody said to me, do you think that those two people could possibly be related? I would look at those images and say, it's possible.
Yeah, I didn't like using that one either. I mean, it isn't very flattering, and I wouldn't want him doing that to me. But so I'm really sorry, Bill. But it had more to do with the gray hair, and he's not raising his eyebrow in that picture, so the whole eyes and all that looks a lot more similar. I think he had a nose job before the whole Bill thing. Way earlier than 68, I think he had a nose job maybe in the 50s.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. I think he's had work done to his nose. I do think that. I think it was earlier. Now, I do want to say at the Super Bowl the other day, I caught him. A lot of people put his picture up, okay? But there was one where you could see the scars on his chin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, send that over to me if you have it.
Okay.
I'd like to take a look at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you could see a definite scar on his chin that something happened there. This is the next one, which is 22, is probably my favorite one, and everybody's going to think I'm nuts, but that's okay.
It's okay.
So the picture of Ataturk on the rock, that I've had that one for years, and I don't know why. Somehow in preparing this video, I was looking at more Cornwall photos, and I came across this one of John and Bill standing on the beach. And I just thought to myself, if I were taking a picture of two of the most famous men in the world, I would try to put them in the middle of the picture. And this picture has a rock in the middle of it. And then I thought to myself, rock? So I went back and I got the Aleister Crowley and baby picture out. And I put them next to each other. And I was like, now, wait a minute. Aleister Crowley is about 6'2". So if he sat on the shorter rock there and put his leg with his knee up where it makes a V in the front of the rock, his other leg would have to lay more flat because the rock flares out where the left leg would be. Then the baby looks like it could be sitting on the top of that, and there's kind of a little dent in the rock near the baby's right ankle. And if you look at the rock in the picture, it has a similar dent. To me, the rocks look similar. I obviously can't promise that or anything, but it was interesting and fun to see this. So.
But you make a good point. If we look at the images on the left and the right with Billy and John, unless the person who took the picture just clicked it real quick and that's the image that was taken, it would appear that they wanted to focus on that rock because it was making a point.
And I know everybody in the audience, before you go type in the comments, the picture was cropped or something. We also understand that, you know, we don't really know the origins, precise origins of the picture and if any of it was cropped off or anything like that. But,
right.
But this is the one that floats around. So it does have a rock in the center. And this was during the Magical Mystery Tour. They stopped in Cornwall, which is another point. Why would they stop there?
Right. And we're not making declarations, folks, or Vicky's not. We're just putting out some information and it's food for thought. So
Yeah. I really want this to be fun and a hobby for people to do, not trying to make everybody get angry at each other and have a fight. This is just a little hobby I do, and I hope that other people enjoy it too. But it's not worth fighting over. It's not worth arguing over. It's not worth threatening anyone over. Just want to say,
right. Just relax.
Yeah, just relax. This is just fun. And if I'm wrong, it wouldn't be the first time.
Right.
Next slide. I just put a picture of the Magical Mystery Tour in here. So why did they stop in Cornwall? Well, if I had left my life behind in 1955, I might want to have a homecoming as my famous self too. Just a thought. Slide number 24 is a picture of Netherwood. Going on to slide 25, Netherwood was constructed between 1860 and 70 and was demolished in 1968. This was the final residence for Aleister Crowley. Pat and Ataturk started visiting Aleister Crowley in mid-May of 1947, just after Ataturk's 10th birthday. AC had not seen him in a number of years, probably due to the war. Aleister Crowley died December 1st, 1947, in room number 13, Netherwood, Hastings. And Pat was by his side. Ataturk was also there, but most accounts say he stepped out of the room for the final moments. And I do want to give a big thank you, especially to Mike and Sally and Wendy, who have all, you know, been working with me for several years now. And I know Wendy shared a passion with me about Ataturk and that whole story. And she's always been really great to bounce things off of. So I want to have a special shout out to her and to Sally, because when I come up with these crazy ideas about rocks and things, she always listens to me. Always listens. So also to you and Tom for waking me up and my husband for putting up with me. So
yeah, I always say that. My wife puts up with all of this stuff, you know. God bless her.
Some of the conversations when he walks into the room that he must hear when I'm on the phone or
right now.
Yes, the last time he was apparently listening outside the door for a few minutes, and he had some questions for me later.
God bless them.
But anyway, this... I just want to say to everybody, this is fun. This is a hobby. If you don't like what I say, then just, you know, let it roll off your back. Don't get upset. I'm not always right. I just wanted to have a little fun today.
Or click the stop button.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
Yeah, we're just having a good time here. So,
right.
And honestly, I'm trying to kind of clear out my coffers, the stuff that's in my files, and get it out there. I'm not saying I'm quitting per se, but I've just got other things in my life I need to do.
I hear you, Vicky. We talked about that before we got started. Even myself, you know, I'm entering into the seventh year of this stuff, and I was thinking, well, how long does this go on? Then you start having the conversation with yourself that perhaps you have put out a critical mass of information, and anything beyond that starts to have diminishing returns, you know. So I hear you on that. I've actually thought that maybe this might be the last year that I'll really invest any significant amount of time in this.
I was in a chat room the other night. I don't know if you know what pilled.net is, and then there's a site within that called Foxhole, and that's a free speech place where creators can go, and they have live shows, and you can say anything you want on there and it will not get censored. So on Saturdays, there's a rock and roll show, and the other day, there was some Paul is Dead people in there. I started talking back and forth with one of them. And I was like, no, go over here and watch this video. They said, I used to do Paul is Dead several years ago when I had knee surgery or something. For a year and a half, I dived into it. And they were like, I quit because there's nothing new. And I was like, oh, there's always something new. Go over here and watch this video. So I sent him to the statue presentation one. He was like, that was really good. I was like, yeah, you got to come back. You just, with Paul is Dead, you just got to take really good breaks and come back to it later.
Well, if you're just going to focus on Paul is Dead, the replacement aspect of it, that has a certain runway. And once you get it, you get it, right? So that's why we spoke before we started that this is more about the overall Beatles conspiracy and what that means to the overall agenda of the controllers. So if you go down that route, which is where we have gone, then there's a lot more
right
stuff to research and to present. But if it's just going to be Paul McCartney was swapped out or replaced in 1966 and replaced by somebody else, then yeah, then you're thinking to yourself, well, that's a limited hangout, so that's that. I'll move on to something else. But, you know, we took it a step further. We took it into an overall larger conspiracy.
If you go into the larger conspiracy, it's a lot easier to see things within the smaller, just the Paul is Dead. And yeah, right. I do have a few things left in my files on just Paul is Dead, but it's a hard topic. I mean, so many people for 50 or more years have been looking at this, and every photo, every interview, every magazine, everything has been combed. It's hard to find anything that people want to listen to because they've heard it already. Then there are the picture lookers that just want to look at pictures all day. And
I can't do that anymore, Vicki.
Yeah, no.
That drives me nuts. The comparison photos. And I realize that that's something, especially when you first get into the whole Paul is Dead conspiracy, that's something that you go through. But for those of us that have been around the block a while, that is no longer of any interest.
Yep.
Unless you discover that he has a fake eye. Right, Sally? I know Sally will be listening to this. But yeah. Well, look, Vicki, this has been a lot of fun, and I'm really glad that we did this. And as you know, you can come on anytime to talk about whatever it is you'd like to talk about and send your Pepper Time presentations along anytime you wish to present those.
Okay.
All right, Vicki. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.